From Georgia Public Broadcasting, this is On Second Thought. I'm Virginia Prescott. The Supplemental Nutrition Assistance Program, or SNAP, was once known as the food stamp program. It was created in 1939 to help Americans who earn little or no money buy food. In 2008, congressional leaders placed food programs like SNAP in the Farm Bill. At that time, food assistance was seen as a largely urban issue. The idea was to encourage lawmakers with districts in cities to support rural agriculture. But the SNAP map has shifted. New U.S. Department of Agriculture numbers show SNAP participation is now highest in rural areas. Bryn Keith Jennings is a senior research analyst from the Center on Budget and Policy Priorities and joining me with her findings from her organization. Hello, Bryn.
Hello, how are you?
Very well. Also joining the conversation, President and CEO of the Atlanta Community Food Bank, Kyle Wade. Kyle, great to meet you.
It's great to be here.
So, Bryn, who is eligible now for SNAP benefits?
Yeah, so SNAP benefits are available broadly for people who are low incomes, which is a wide swath of the American population. As you mentioned, it's rural families, it's urban families, and everywhere in between. Currently, it serves most members are either children or elderly people or people with disabilities, and it serves many working families as well and helps put food on the table for them.
Your organization has done a lot of research on SNAP recipients in the U.S. How does Georgia's populations receiving SNAP compare to other states?
Georgia is similar to SNAP participants nationwide. In general, as I mentioned, most participants are either children or living with children, parents of children, or seniors or people with disabilities, and also have a pretty large contingent of working families as well. So those cashiers that you see every day or those home health aides taking care of your elderly parents, many of them are SNAP participants.
Welfare has gone up and down in popularity since 1939 and became a bit of a flashpoint, I can say safely, when former President Ronald Reagan popularized the term welfare queen. Georgia's own Newt Gingrich had a large role in perpetuating that image. Or it stirs pictures of a lazy black woman in the city defrauding the government by having several children, living off of the benefits instead of getting a job. Is this accurate?
I would say it's definitely not accurate. As I mentioned, many SNAP participants are working, and many of them are working but will sometimes get benefits temporarily while they're between jobs. A lot of them are working in jobs that don't provide a lot of stability, and SNAP is a really important support to help fill those gaps when they're not.
Kyle, you work at a large urban food bank and part of a Georgia statewide network. What do you think? Do you think people hold on to this welfare queen stereotype?
Well, I think there are a lot of misperceptions out there around not just people who are participating in the SNAP program, but also around food insecurity and the type of folks that benefit from our food pantry network at the food bank as well. I think people imagine that that population are folks like maybe you described Ronald Reagan kind of characterizing that population as back in the 80s. But in fact, what we see is, as Bryn already said, there's a tremendous amount of turnover in the population that is participating in SNAP or that is participating in food pantries through the food bank network. We know in Georgia, for example, the average amount of time somebody is on the SNAP program is less than a year, and that includes seniors who are going to be on that program for a much more indefinite period of time. And so the program works as it's designed, which is to help people as they fall on hard times, as they experience a job loss or some other form of financial crisis, to survive through that crisis. And when they get on their feet, they cycle out of the program.
Why do you think then that the misperceptions persist that people who are hungry or getting some sort of food assistance are on a track to do that for many, many years when you're talking about in your program, which is different than SNAP, certainly, people are looking for what sounds like a temporary respite?
Well, you know, I think those stereotypes exist for a variety of complex reasons. You know, they're sort of powerful images, and people can latch on to those images because they simplify what is a really complex story. I mean, the truth of the matter is that many millions of people in Georgia and around the country are facing really difficult economic circumstances. We have not seen over the past 40 years for low and moderate income families, we have not seen wage growth that we'd like to see. We've seen increases in costs associated with healthcare and housing and transportation and other childcare. And so that has put an increasing amount of pressure on low-income working families to just be able to make basic ends meet for their families. And that's complicated. That's a complicated narrative. So I think it's much easier to gravitate toward simplistic understandings of why things are the way they are. But the fact is that we have lots and lots of folks who are doing everything they can to get ahead, but they are facing really difficult pressures economically. And we're here at the food bank to help them navigate those challenges.
Bryn, what do you think? Is there a political gain in perpetuating a stereotype or a wrong image of who needs food assistance?
I think Kyle was exactly right that I think it's a very complex picture, and I think policymakers may use that sort of rhetoric to try to justify policies for different reasons. But, you know, I think when you do look at this population who participates in SNAP, which again, as Kyle mentioned, is a population, it's not a fixed population. And so I think sometimes these stereotypes try to portray them as fixed, but in fact, it's a population that often is working very hard, and because it's harder to make ends meet on those wages, turn to SNAP and other programs for help.
Besides the image that is perpetuated both in political spheres and maybe in some popular opinion, Kyle, how do these images of what hungry people look like or people who need or who are receiving benefits look like? How does that work for people who are themselves trying to put food on the table? Is there a stigma that holds them back from getting help?
I think that's a really important insight. You know, the challenge for the families we serve is kind of walking around with the stress and the often the shame that it comes from outside for not being able to fully meet the needs of their family. You know, I met a lady at a food pantry the other day, one of the pantries that gets food from the food bank to serve its local community. And she was there with her two young kids. This was in Cobb County, a place not often associated with high levels of need. And what I learned from that lady when in talking with her at the pantry is that she is working, and the job she has during the day is she works in a cafeteria at a local school. And so the really difficult irony there is that she spends her day feeding other people's kids, but then to feed her own kids has to turn to a food pantry to help her. And I think that just carries with it a lot of complicated emotions. I know in my own case, if the thought of not being able to provide for my children is a really difficult thing to even begin to get my head around. And so that stigma, I think, can lead people to try to solve it themselves, to reach out at the last minute rather than earlier for help, to make choices about the kinds of food that they try to access to help ensure their kids have the food that they need so they get less nutritious food, they get food that's not going to go bad in the refrigerator, to stretch their dollar as far as it can go rather than reaching out sooner for the kind of help that they need. A lot of people that you talk to on the SNAP program will say that, you know, they think that benefit should be for somebody else, and they will wait to the last minute to go and get that help. Again, thinking that, you know, there's somebody worse off than I am who should get this help before me, when in fact, I think it's a part of the American, I think, mythology that we're all about doing it, pulling ourselves up by our bootstraps, relying on self-reliance, rather than recognizing that all of us in life need help sometimes. And reaching out for help is a sign of strength and a sign of doing what you can for your family.
That's Kyle Waite. He's president and CEO of the Atlanta Food Bank. Also with us, Bryn Keith Jennings. She's a senior research analyst from the Center on Budget and Policy Priorities. And we're talking about who gets SNAP benefits or who is suffering from food insecurity these days. Now, Bryn, we talked a little bit about the stereotypes. Now to the facts. The U.S. Department of Agriculture data show since 2012, SNAP participation highest among households in rural areas in small towns. Can you expand upon those numbers for us and the map that you painted for us earlier from a national perspective?
Yeah, definitely. As you mentioned, SNAP is a benefit that helps people throughout the country. And one of the really powerful features of it is benefits are based on a household's income and how much they have available to spend. And then they get benefits that they can spend in their local communities. So it's a benefit that not only helps people afford adequate food, but also helps make sure that they can shop in their communities at local grocery stores. So as you mentioned, currently about 1 in 8 Americans participate in SNAP in an average month. So it is a widespread benefit. People receive benefits in every state, every county, throughout the country. And benefits are incredibly important to helping people make ends meet. But one thing I wanted to point out that people are often surprised by when I mention to them, they're actually quite small. The average benefit's only, when you look at per person per meal, is only about $1.40. So it's an incredibly important benefit, but it is really just a supplement to help people get the food that they need.
Kyle, what is that distinction between hunger and food insecurity?
So that's a great question that we wrestle with all the time at the food bank. Hunger is a much more relatable term than food insecurity, which sounds kind of academic and harder to access. You know, I think when we talk about hunger, it's really a state. And you're probably, in describing hunger, somebody who has been without food for an extended period of time. You think about maybe places where you're dealing with famine or other kind of massive disruptions to the food supply. And that's not really the case in the United States, you know, where we have an overproduction of food. Here, what we're talking about is, in terms of food insecurity, really a technical term that refers to families who are often either running out of food or worried that they're about to run out of food. And there are a series of questions that U.S. Department of Agriculture puts together to assess levels of food insecurity around the country. But the fundamental existence that characterizes people who are food insecure is that you're constantly worried, is my money going to last to provide all the food that my family needs to live and thrive? And for those homes that are food insecure, it's not just that they run out of food, but it's all the choices along the way that they make to stretch their dollar until they get to the end of the month when they get a new round of resources. And so instead of buying fresh, healthy foods, instead of buying more expensive foods, they're going to buy the least expensive option that they can to ensure that they go as far as they can with the limited resources they have. And those choices have consequences on their health, on their mental health. It creates greater rates of disease and sickness, which creates more financial pressure as they incur medical expenses. It often results in lost wages or even lost employment. And then families are faced with the kind of trade-off decisions that you don't want to have to face. I'm going to buy food instead of medicine. I'm going to buy food instead of paying my rent or mortgage. And that pressure just continues on itself forever.
Well, we're going to hold up on this conversation with just a minute. Bryn Keith Jennings is with us, senior research analyst from the Center on Budget and Policy Priorities. Also, Kyle Wade. He is the president and CEO of the Atlanta Community Food Bank. Stay with us as we continue this conversation about access, about benefits, and food insecurity. I'm Virginia Prescott, and this is On Second Thought. From Georgia Public Broadcasting, this is On Second Thought. I'm Virginia Prescott, and I'm speaking with the president and CEO of the Atlanta Community Food Bank, Kyle Wade. Also with us, Bryn Keith Jennings. She's a senior research analyst from the Center on Budget and Policy Priorities. Well, of course, this is a time of year when people are thinking about feasting and coming together, and a time when the lack of resources and especially food insecurity comes into stark relief. We're also learning that despite maybe popular perceptions, the amount of people who are using and needing food benefits and SNAP benefits are coming from rural populations, whereas it has always been propagated as an urban problem. Kyle, I don't know if we really distinguish the connection between what you and others do at community food banks and SNAP benefits. everybody is eligible to come to a food bank, correct, or to be served by a food bank?
Yeah, generally speaking, if you show up at a food pantry asking for help with getting food, we're going to serve you. And I think that's just a lower barrier of entry. There are certainly certain requirements around certain programs where you have to be under a certain income threshold to be able to participate. But generally speaking, if you need help, we want to help you. And that's an important distinction because in the studies that identify how many people are food insecure, a significant number of them, about a third in the state of Georgia, have incomes above 185% of the federal poverty line. And what it means is that people are facing significant cost pressure that offsets their income, whatever that income might be. We all experience today the increased costs associated with healthcare and education and housing, and that's creating greater vulnerability for a bigger percentage of our population.
We've been talking about access to food, and it's not just finances, but sometimes there are other considerations like actually getting to a store and finding one where you live. Samantha Max from the Macon Telegraph recently set out on foot to find groceries near a now vacant supermarket in Midtown Macon.
I set off on foot from the now vacant Kroger with a basic shopping list.
Fine with milk, bread, eggs, chicken, bananas, apples, carrots, lettuce, beans, and cereal. I see we've got a gas station right here. Hi. Candy. Beef jerky. I'll write that down as some form of protein. But I only found two items on my grocery list, and both were more expensive than at Kroger. This is on our list. So I headed over to the Family Dollar across the street. Candy. Plenty of different pastries. Oh, peanut butter. That's a good thing for the list, actually. All right, we've got eggs. Okay, so we've got like some pre-cooked chicken. Tyson's. Here's our fruit section. In my quest for fresh fruits and vegetables, I made one more stop, a mile and a half from the old Kroger. My store had everything I needed and more. Fresh produce, a full meat and poultry section, even non-essentials like spices, sauces, and avocados. Only 99 cents. That's not too bad.
But my groceries cost over $6 more than at Kroger.
Ooh, pickled eggs. Yum. Oh, here.
Calculate in the cost of transportation if you don't want to trek the extra mile and a half, and those dollar signs add up. One shopper told me she spends 2 hours on the bus to get to the Kroger across town. My store's manager said his sales have picked up too. But for many people who used to walk to the Pine Ono Kroger, fresh and affordable groceries are now out of reach.
Samantha Max, that was recorded by GPB's Grant Blankenship. Bryn, so we just heard Samantha challenge to find a more affordable food from going to various different stores in Macon, but now SNAP benefits, formerly known as food stamps, are accepted at some chain stores. How do these factor into the discussion and access to food?
Yeah, so SNAP, as I mentioned before, is really a public-private partnership. Participants get benefits that they can spend in their local community. And across the country, I think in Georgia, there's over 10,000 different stores that they can use their benefits and buy food. So those include grocery stores, those include some large retailers like, you know, Costco or Walmart, those large stores, as well as some smaller mom-and-pop grocery stores as well.
What do we know about the relationship between food deserts and the high rates of obesity and chronic diseases such as hypertension and diabetes and even cancers that can be linked to unhealthy food use here in the state and across the country?
I think two thoughts. One, what we heard in the clip is a reflection, along with just the sort of food desert issue, of just the increasing amount of pressure that families are facing in communities that are being really challenged economically. And it's just becoming harder and harder for those communities to be stable and secure in terms of food and other kind of access, and certainly for those families. So it's part of a broader pattern of pressure that those families are facing. And then the second thought is SNAP is a really important program. It's a nutrition program. It's a program that helps people access food. But the kinds of challenges you see with food deserts are part of a much bigger problem of economic decline that certain communities are facing. This is certainly true in rural communities around the country. And we're not going to solve that problem through the SNAP program.
So that is a much bigger policy decision. There's political will behind that. There is popular will behind that. A lot of really, really big questions. So without attacking or breaking down those problems, are you at the Atlanta Community Food Bank and SNAP in general just treating symptoms of a system that has a lot more sickness?
We don't think that's treating a symptom. We think that's part of the solution. That said, you know, the amount of demand that is out there is enormous, and we think it's only going to become larger as we move forward, barring some more holistic, bigger picture kind of solutions that we have to make, particularly in those communities that are really challenged by the sort of economic patterns of the last 40 years.
Well, both of you have seen the numbers. You know the reality on the ground when it comes to better understanding benefits and need in Georgia and the country at large. What, in closing, would you like somebody who is listening to consider or to know or to think about?
So I think the prevailing takeaway that we would hope anybody listening to this or anybody who volunteers and visits the food bank to take away is food insecurity is everywhere in our community. It's often hidden. It's often in families where you would not expect it. And a significant percentage of the people that we're talking about are children. You know, a third of the people that we're serving through the Atlanta Community Food Bank are kids. So these are kids who are going to school every day. They're trying to grow into adults who are going to be contributors, who are going to be our workforce of the future. And those kids are facing circumstances where they don't always have the food they need to pay attention and do well in school. Those are our kids. They're not some other people's kids. You know, this is our community. And so we have to collectively embrace the responsibility to ensure that we're helping those kids become who they can be.
How about for you, Bryn? Anything that you want to leave our listeners with?
Yeah, I mean, I would agree. I think a lot of research out there shows that children who get SNAP when they're younger grow up to be healthier. They're more likely to graduate from high school. It really is a long-term investment. And to echo some earlier thoughts, I do think it's really important just to say it's not, you know, a community that's foreign to us. It's all of our neighbors and people we see every day. It's a support that really helps people put food on the table and helps people go to work, helps children learn, helps everyone be a little bit better off. So I just hope, you know, as we all sit down on Thanksgiving to our dinners, just to think about what an important support it is.
Bryn Keith Jennings, thank you very much for speaking with us.
Thank you.
Bryn is Senior Research Analyst from the Center on Budget and Policy Priorities. And Kyle Wade, what a pleasure. Thank you so much.
Thank you for having me.
Kyle Wade is President and CEO of the Atlanta Community Food Bank. If you'd like to know how you can help people this Thanksgiving and throughout the holiday season, go to our website at gpbnews.org.